what you're doing to me. This MTV is not for free. It's OPC is killing me. So desperately I'll sing the other love. Job and I'm so raging, hating, pain and fear itself. And I can't keep these feelings on the shelf. I've tried, well, no doubt I lied. To be friends with suicide, but I got too much pride inside to hide or slide. I'll do as I'll decide and let it ride until I've died. And only then shall I abide this try to catch a little tunes. I've hit 3 minute ditties. I wanna bust all your balloons. I wanna burn all of your cities to the ground. I found I will not mess around unless I play. Then hey, I will go on all day. Hear what I say, I have a prayer to pray. That's really all this was. Well, I'm feeling stuck in me if I've got no rhyme.
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by DraftKings. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with my co-host, Justin Hennick. Got a fun episode. We got an interview with Nick Filotto talking about six mid-round prospects. Last year, we talked about Matt Parrott, so maybe we're going to be talking about a future Giant on the episode. So that was good fun. 45 minutes of draft talk. And we got to talk about Zach Fulton and Ryan Anderson being signed. Justin, how are you?
How dare you forget about Devontae Downs being brought back? I'm willing to bet an insignificant body part that Nick Filotto has talked about some prospect who will eventually be a Giant. An insignificant body part. So I mean like a pinky, a middle toe, maybe the ring finger on my left finger, because screw marriage, right? I don't want to wind up giving away half my shit. Ooh, bad word. Sorry. Bobby, how are you?
I'm good. And I'm even better because of the special people who brought us this episode. And one of them just commented on a post.
That was really morbid than what I just said to start off the show.
Yeah, it was. My parents
are divorced.
Boy, we are really getting off to a bad start right now. This episode was brought to you by Larry Edelstein. Brian with no name. He's a horse with no name. Alex sure. Garber. The Garbage Man Garber, Josh mm-hmm. Breger, that's a German name, and then Ernie Casanova, Cowboy Casanova Ernie from the Sesame Street. Justin, who are these Sesame Street characters?
Do you remember that there was an episode of Talking Giants where I sang Cowboy Casanova by Carrie Underwood a couple seconds of it?
Nope, I probably blocked that out from my memory.
Do you want me to do it again
no,
so you can
please.
Remember?
Who are these people?
They went to patreon.com/talkinggiants, and for $2 a month, they get to support us. They get to watch us for a couple minutes tonight, because we recorded an awesome interview with Nick Filotto to talk about some exciting moves the Giants made, most notably re-signing and bringing back Devontae Downs. Patreon.com/talkinggiants, $2 a month, and Bobby sends you some magnets, and you may win a free shirt, maybe even two. Maybe you can get lucky and win a shirt twice, two shirts 1 month, because we do shirt raffles twice a month.
All right, let's get into some Giants football.
Yeah.
Zach Fulton and Ryan Anderson were signed. Let's start with Zach Fulton because the offensive line is very important. And this is an interesting signing that I don't think gives us a ton of clarity with the Giants. They signed Zach Fulton, 6'5", 321-pound guard, 29 years old. Started 44 games over the last 3 years for the Texans. Started 46 games his first 4 years for the Chiefs as a guard and then a little bit of center, too, one season. Sixth-round pick from Tennessee, so there actually is a connection there, a coaching staff connection, which they didn't do that a ton this offseason, but Derek Dooley, the tight ends coach, was his head coach at the University of Tennessee. Justin and I did a film breakdown. I watched the film on him. Right now, with this guard room, with Will Hernandez, Shane Lemieux, and now Zach Fulton, I think Zach Fulton is right around that area that Shane Lemieux is. They're very different players. But I do think Zach Fulton right now is a little bit better than Shane Lemieux. And I think there will be, if there's no guard added in the top of the draft, I do think it'll be a competition between those two for a starting spot.
And you evaluate Shane. So Will Hernandez, we would rank as the number one guard on the team, talent-wise, right? And then number two, you said Fulton. Number three, Shane Lemieux. So I think you rank Fulton as possibly a better run blocker. The other way around. Fulton as a better pass blocker and Lemieux as a better run blocker, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Fulton, pass blocking wise. Now, it's crazy. He gave up a PFF. We know they're kind of wonky with their sack numbers. They'll give credit to, and I've posted examples like, hey, they credited this guy for a sack in this game. Look at all these sacks. None of them are on him. Or this guy did give up a sack and they credited him. So I only went through two games. They credited him for 11 sacks in 2020, which is a ton for anybody, let alone a guard. But that's a ton of sacks. In 2019, though, he only gave one sack. And then his six-year career before 2020, he only gave up 14 sacks. So you're looking at 2020 giving up 11. The first 6 years of his career, 14. Like, that's crazy. So I don't think, you know, at 29, I don't think he's just on this huge decline. But anyways, as a pass blocker, he has good recoverability. He picks up stunts and blitzes well, like a lot better than, you know, the Giants have in the past. But he has slow feet. He has slow feet, so he can get beat outside, inside, that type of stuff. And in the run game, he's not going to move anybody. He's gonna have to win with the right angles, coming off at the right time, putting his helmet in the right spot, hands in the right spot, because he's not going to move guys the way Shane Lemieux or an Andrew Thomas do.
I mean, in terms of the pass blocking, though, he does have the good recoverability, and where he does have the active feet is after the initial maybe snap of the ball and after the first step. Little slow off the first step. I think you were breaking this down. But that does scare me. So if we're talking about, you know, obviously I don't think we view Fulton as an answer or as the answer for starting guard in 2021. But if the Giants do, there's something that does scare me with relying on your recoverability, you know, relying on your ability to recover if you got beat off of your first step and if you maybe get caught leaning a little bit. So this is a move that I don't think it restricts the Giants from doing anything in terms of the draft. I don't think it restricts them, even if they still want to look at a Turner from Carolina. I don't even think it restricts them doing that. I know they would have to work around the cap. That's also probably not happening at this point if Engram is not traded before the draft, because Kyle Rudolph's contract is also signed too. There was a little bit of doubt for like 24 hours whether that was actually going to happen. So, Bobby, if anything, this puts in my mind and in my brain, it puts Will Hernandez's future in doubt more than anything, but I think that's a reach of a take.
I view it as insurance for the draft. That, hey, we don't have to get a guard in the first three rounds. We have a guy who started 90 career games that could come in and play if Shane Lemieux doesn't step up. Like, I think their goal is for Shane Lemieux to start. I think they want Shane Lemieux to grow and start, which Shane Lemieux can do.
I have a question.
I hope I have an answer.
Now, this isn't ideal for offensive linemen, but Joe Judge showed a very, very big willingness to do this. Do we possibly see a rotation of rushing downs, first and second down? We see Shane Lemieux in there, and then third down, we see Fulton in there if he's a better pass blocker than Shane Lemieux. Do we see that rotation?
If you did that in series, it would probably be the first time ever. I could still see them doing the rotation where this guy gets to the series, this guy gets to the series. You know, I mean, we saw the Giants do that, so we know they're willing to try it. But if there's no, I would be blown away if they did that in a series where it's like, okay, like now you come out for this play, you bring this guy in.
All right, well, maybe not within a series, but I think they're, you know, let's face it, you know, when you have the 2-minute warning at the end of the second quarter, it's more likely that you're going to be throwing the ball than running the ball. So then maybe that's a series where you want Fulton to be in there versus the first drive of the game. If you maybe don't want to be so aggressive, you want to get Saquon going, then Shane Lemieux would be there. So I guess it may, you know, may not depend, you know, series by series or play by play, or no, it may not depend by play, but series by series based off of what the game script is and what the game is calling for. Maybe they do that if they don't acknowledge something in the draft, which I think we're still under the impression end of March, beginning of April, we're on the boat of we would like the Giants to do something pretty significant within the first three rounds at offensive line.
Yeah, I the only way I see them doing a rotation is that if Zach Fulton wins the starting job, but they still want to give some series to Shane Lemieux, the young guy. Like, yeah. I don't see Shane Lemieux winning the starting job, and there's like, okay, let's get the 29-year-old vet on a 1-year contract some reps in there. I think it would be if Zach Fulton wins it, but they also want to give Shane Lemieux those you know, a certain amount of reps a game, because they do like Shane Lemieux. There's yeah, no doubt about that. We also don't know how they feel about Will Hernandez. And then someone made a good point to me. It's like, well, maybe they have shown you what they think about Will Hernandez, and I don't want to accept it, which is very real, because, you know, I like Will Hernandez much more than I like Lemieux or Fulton now. But I feel like if they if that was continuing, they would have made a move on Hernandez, and they still could, but Hernandez isn't the type of guy, isn't the type of player that you're going to bring into this season and just have him on the bench.
Correct. Correct. You've made that point before, and I'll tell you what, Kyle Rudolph signed his contract. A nice trade package is Will Hernandez and Evan Engram. That's like a nice trade package for a team. I mean, Evan Engram has how many years left on his rookie
both
deal?
One.
It expires in 2022.
This is both the last year of their deals.
Evan Engram had the fifth-year option. Well, I thought Will Hernandez would have gotten a four-year deal since he was drafted in 2018.
This will be his fourth year.
Oh, okay.
2018, 19, 20. This year's 21.
Well, I can't count. So, but that still is a tempting trade package for a team that may want to give us a... That would be a pretty nice trade package, I think, that where we wouldn't just accept a fourth-round pick for that. That's maybe like one or two picks in there.
Yeah, you could get something for that. We've got a long time before the draft, so there's moves to be made. But, yeah, like I think... With all this conversation, is back to my original point. This move doesn't give me any clarity on the offensive line. You know, I view it as insurance, but like it could be a multiple of different things, and we don't know how they feel. As much as you might think we know how they feel about Hernandez, we don't know.
Correct.
So, I said I was going to assume I was going to retire the assume. It's going to be the minimum contract, but you would think it's near there for Fulton. It's going to be like $5 million a year. All right. Next, before we get into the interview, Ryan Anderson, not the white three-point shooter for your Orlando Magic, the outside linebacker, edge player for the Washington football team, 6'2", 255 pounds, 26 years old, second-round pick from Alabama. So this is him and Raglan, both a couple Alabama guys, Joe Judge, an Alabama guy. How about that? Burton Burns, an Alabama guy. 1 year contract, $990,000. 2019, he played a good amount for them. He played 50% of the snaps, had 44 tackles, 4 sacks, 4 tackles for a loss. And then with the new coaching staff, the addition of Chase Young, his snaps went down to 14%. And he was playing, you know, he was always playing edge, but he went from being a guy who would play, you know, 20 to 25% coverage snaps to none at all, and was a hand in the dirt, rushed the passer from the edge, defensive end type guy. So he clearly wasn't a system fit, and they just had better players in front of him with Young, Sweat, and Kerrigan.
Yeah, the 1 year where he got somewhat of significant playing time, like Bobby said, the production wasn't bad. I mean, he even compiled 19 pressures, which is kind of cool, exactly a 50% rate. You know, let's just... You multiply that by 2, 100% of the snaps, that's 38 pressures, which is a good season, but it's never realistic for somebody to play 100% of the snaps. This hurt a little bit because Kyler Fackrell did go to, not San Diego, he went to LA, signed with the Chargers, and this was a signing that was clearly like, this is a special team signing. He's played a decent amount of percentage of snaps on special teams. The year that he played 49% of the snaps in 2019 on defense, he also played 49% of the special team snaps for Washington as well. And then in 2020, he played 30% of the special team snaps. So, he doesn't have a role on for every single snap that is on special teams, but probably punt team. You know, he's going down there and he's running down. He's making a tackle, maybe even kickoffs too. So I can imagine that's what this signing is. And that's kind of disappointing. Knowing Giants are very thin at edge, and Kyler Fackrell left for a very, probably, I don't know what his final contract is, but very team-friendly deal.
But I think it is. Okay. There's no numbers yet. I looked for them. I think it is a very clear, like, hey, we signed Kenny Golladay, Adoree Jackson. We can't afford Kyler Fackrell. You know, we can't afford Kyler Fackrell, even at his contract last year of $4 million a year. And you know, I think we all think he lived up to that contract. Fackrell was a good solid player. It wasn't anything crazy, but he was a good solid player for them. And when he went down, it was actually a significant loss because of Golden being traded and Carter and Ximenez already going down. So when he went down, you really noticed it on the edge for the Giants. So you understand it though. It's like, hey, they went out and got some big money guys. And they weren't able to keep Kyler Fackrell. So they bring in Anderson. someone who's played football has, you know, he's all right, but I don't think he's better than Fackrell in any facet, you know, not as pass rusher, run defense, or coverage. But he will, I think he's, right now, he's right in the middle of, hey, you got Carter and Ximenez as the top two guys, and then you have Coughlin, Cam Brown, and Nico Lelos. I feel like he's smack dab in the middle, where he's like, he's not down on their level. You know, those are young guys who can grow, but I don't view him as good as a Lorenzo Carter. And you could maybe say Ximenez, but we've seen so little of Ximenez, it's hard to have an opinion on who he is.
Yeah, and when he was actually playing, he wasn't getting crazy snaps either. So that's something to keep note of and keep in the back of your brain. Here's an idea. Research Rick loved to talk about the three defensive linemen sets for Patrick Graham in 2020. And when all of our edge rushers were traded, injured, went down, not on the team, the Giants kind of had to do that by choice. But do we think that they maybe do that a little bit more in 2021 just because of the personnel that they have? Obviously, if we add an edge rusher in the first three rounds, that probably changes the answer to this question. But why not? I admit, you know, we're making the strength. You know, we even signed Obi-Wan Kenobi, who's had great production in the past. So why not go with more of these three defensive lineman sets?
Well, I want to build off that. If Efedi Odenegbo, people have assumed that because he's a defensive end in a 4-3 that he's going to be an outside linebacker. I'd be surprised. It's not impossible, but he's closer to a nose tackle than he is a stand-up defensive end. Like, he played some nose tackle, defensive tackle reps. I do view him as that hand-in-the-ground defensive tackle. You know, you could call him a defensive end. Like, you could call Leonard Williams a defensive end, but at the end of the day, in this 3-4 system, he's a defensive tackle, even if he's lining up on the end. Like, you know, Leonard Williams, you don't count him as edge. You know, you count Carter, you know, Ximenez as edge guys. So I don't view him as a stand-up outside linebacker, and I feel pretty good about that take. You know, we can't see it for sure until we see them on the practice field. But I don't view him as a guy who's going to be standing up on the edge and just rushing the passer. And, you know, Patrick Graham, scheme versatility. They didn't play Golden because he could drop in the coverage. Effetti's never done that. He's never done that. He's done it just as much as Dexter Lawrence and Dalvin Tomlinson have. So I don't view him as an answer out there. So I do agree, though. They're going to run those three defensive line sets. You know, you got Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams. You want to get B.J. Hill in there. Austin Johnson to play nose tackle. Now, Effetti. Hell, maybe they even make R.J. McIntosh active, or they even bring in somebody else in the end of the draft or whatever. But, yeah, I do think they'll do that. Plus, Ragland is a pretty good upgrade over David Mayo. Like, I really like the Reggie Ragland signing, and I think he'll battle with Tay Crowder for that starting job next to Blake. So they're going to do a lot of different stuff, and I think we're going to see a lot more blitzing, too, to help for the lack of that outside linebacker group and the addition of Dory Jackson. I do think you're going to see more blitzing than they did this past season.
Cool. Yeah, Reggie Ragland, big, stocky guy, but he kind of good in coverage. Blake Martinez is good at getting to the quarterback. It makes me feel a little bit better if we have two linebackers out there on third down instead of three safety sets. So Joe Judge, it really does feel like Joe Judge is putting his a blueprint and this footprint on this roster with guys that he feels comfortable with, which, you know, Jordan Ronan said, you know, he came on the show, you know, a couple weeks ago, and, you know, he said that the coaching staffs have in the past not been given that input, which is nice to hear that has kind of changed. Bobby, Devontae Downs, you're so excited that he's back.
Well, and before we get into Devontae Downs, I think we got to remember, round 1, 2, and 3, you expected to impact from day one, depending on if you're Matt Parrott, you're not. But, like, if we go offensive lineman, wide receiver, outside linebacker, or whatever combination, like, those three guys are meant to play. So, I you know, those are three impact players that are yet to be on the squad. Devontae Downs was signed, and I know everyone's like, Bobby's going to be so pissed. No, if he's the fourth inside linebacker when 53-man cuts happen, then I'll be annoyed. But you have to bring 90 people in the camp. Or you don't have to, but you bring 90 people in the camp. I got no problem with them bringing him in the camp. You know, I think they saw, like, I mean, they saw it with you know, Downs. Like, they saw who he was. There's a reason he was benched very quickly. So I would be surprised if he's the number 4 inside linebacker on the day they make cuts.
And, you know, very smart people like myself always say, Bobby, that the depth is always thinnest at interior linebacker. Like, everybody that's on the depth chart is going to be playing. Smart people like myself say that all the time.
PC, only you know that joke that I say that all the time. But anyways, Danny Behan says my tweet was more of a joke towards you, Bobby. I'm not remembering what tweet he's talking about.
We're not picking up what you're putting down, Danny Behan.
Oh, the Devontae Downs. Oh, Danny, there was millions of people who were tweeting that at me, and I get it. It's like I've railed against Devontae Downs pretty hard, which kind of makes me feel bad too. But it's like, you know what? I've never made it personal.
So, Bobby, your tweet mentions were madness. You want to know what else is madness?
What's madness?
March Madness. The tournament. It's in full swing. And now we're getting to the time of the year of March Madness, and we're getting to the time of the month where my brain gets confused, because it's called March Madness, but the most exciting basketball is going to be taking place in April. That confuses my brain. The action has not disappointed, though. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting new customers in the center of the action. Bet $1 on any tournament game, and if your team wins, you win $100. It's that simple. Turning $1 into $100 is 101 odds. Pick any college basketball team that's still in the hunt for your shot at winning $100. All it takes is a $1 bet and that team winning their next game. There's no better way to put your college basketball knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. Don't worry if college basketball isn't for you. DraftKings Sportsbook has 101 odds on select fighters for this weekend's UFC 260. Somebody in the YouTube comments actually complimented me on my, I forget what his name is, the announcer for UFC. So I'm going to do it again. Fighting! That wasn't as good. But I'm going to make a video of that one day, of me doing an impersonation of that person.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, DraftKings. Justin, we're going to have...
I'm not done yet. Oh. DraftKings, safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit Bobby Skinner and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code JohnBoy when you sign up to turn $1 to $100 if college basketball team of your choosing pulls off the win. That's code JohnBoy to turn $1 to $100 for limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 years older. New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKingsSportsbook.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9 with it. There you go, Bobby Skinner. Now you can talk.
All right, we got Nick Filato, the Big Blue Banter podcast. He's a guy who does a lot of draft stuff.
Ooh, what's that?
Some type of vehicle. And we're going to talk about six draft prospects. We got Aaron Banks, Quinn Meinerz, Amir Smith-Marset. I think I got that name right. Trill Williams, Rashad Weaver, and Ellerson Smith. We're going to talk about all those guys. Last year, we talked about Matt Parrott. So make sure. And last year, I went through with him. His list was pretty good last year. So make sure to check it out. Well, you're here already. And without further ado, Nick Filato.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Play fast. Whoa.
All right. We're recording. We got Nick Filato, Big Blue Banter. Sport a million different places, but I think most of our audience knows you from Big Blue Banter. I know you write for Big Blue View, Giants Country. Nick Filato, what's going on, my man?
Nothing, man. Just having a good time. Giants were really active in free agency, giving us a lot of hope for this 2021 season in this desolate division that is the NFC East. I know Dak Prescott's going to be back, but I mean, we have no idea what's going on with, you know, fellow Paisan Nick Sirianni over there. The Philadelphia Eagles, Washington football team. Yeah, they're the NFC East defending champs, but pretty sure we could topple them, but we're going to have to see, man. It's going to make for a really interesting 2021.
Yeah, it's time to go for the Giants, you know, where it's, you know, there's still a lot of improvement to need, but you need it, but the Giants, it's time to go. And a big part of that is going to be the draft. And if we can get mid-round guys to contribute, and that's what we want to do. This is we did this a year ago, and I think it went pretty well. And we even drafted one of the guys. We talked about five guys last year. One of them was Matt Parrott. Everyone who's listening knows who Matt Parrott is. You did a pretty good job. You got Logan Wilson, who he had 33 tackles, a sack, two interceptions for the Bengals, third-round pick last year. Kayvon Wallace, Kayvon Wallace was probably the one that didn't pan out, but I was a big Kayvon Wallace fan, and he's still got time. Alton Robinson had four sacks on 29% of the snaps. And then Troy Pride played 50% of the snaps. Too. So I'm hoping we get some gems out of your list this year.
Yeah, let's see. And there's a lot. I mean, this year, there's a lot that's nebulous. You know, we're not 100% sure what's actually going to happen, Bobby, because a lot of these players didn't even play in 2020, you know? So there's a lot of uncertainty in this draft, more so than even normal.
I know, it's so weird when you go to like look for a guy's like film and it's like, where's 2020? And then you read his profile. I try to watch the film before I read the guy's profile, so I don't have like any preconceived notions.
Same.
And then you read the profile and it's like, oh, opted out of 2020. It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Which I think that's the fun part about finding these mid-round guys. I feel like that's where we all like, you know, stake our claims on our draft prowess. So before we get into that, what are you guys doing at Big Blue Banter for draft month? Coming up, I know you guys have been pumping out a ton of episodes. What do you guys got planned?
Yeah, Dan Schneier, CBS, and myself, we've been doing a lot of draft profiles, and we're going to be doing our rankings and stuff once I meet myself and Dan kind of get the entire class within our eye shot. We want to be fair to everybody, start doing some rankings and stuff. But right now we're just doing draft profiles and talking about what the New York Giants were able to do in free agency right now. Dan actually just got back from Vegas, so he's recollecting himself, and we just recorded a draft episode that will drop, or a free agency episode that will drop here shortly.
How many players do you get through for the draft? Because this is my first year where I told myself I was going to do 200 players. And I'm thinking I might fall a little short of that because I've been trying to grind through it. And then with all the other Giants news, I think I'm at like 60 right now. I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through this whole damn thing.
I think I have more than 80 actual draft evaluations, but my eyes on it's going to be well over probably 150, maybe close to that 200 number. It's interesting though, man. You know, you watch a tape, Georgia against Alabama, right there, you're getting how many prospects that are going to be draftable from the Alabama offense, yeah, and the Georgia defense. So if you do it that way, and it's going to take you hours to get through one film, it really will. And especially if you're taking good notes and being diligent about it, you're watching one play several different times to kind of fully comprehend what actually is going down, what the offense wants to do, what the defense is trying to do as well. And then you kind of evaluate that way. You can bang out a lot of players like that, but it's very time consuming. So you just got to be, have your attention to detail ready and dive into the film.
The Alabama O-line was brutal to go through because you got Dickerson, who I love, Deontay Brown, and then Leatherwood, where it's like, all right, went through this play like twice on this player, now rewind, go through it on this player, rewind, go through on this player. And I think that like just Alabama versus Georgia, I think it took me like 4 hours just to go through those three O-linemen. So
oh, absolutely. And then you look at the Georgia defenders too. You got Eric Stokes, you got Tyson Campbell, you got Azeez Ojulari, you got the linebacker, you have the safety as well, Lekante, who is a draft eligible player. There's a lot of draft eligible people there.
For sure. So before we get into these mid-round guys, right now, what do you do at 11? Because it's wide open. Last year, it was offensive tackle or Simmons. This year, you can go a million different ways right now.
I know. And if you were to ask us this last week, we would have been like, oh, it has to be corner or it has to be wide receiver. But now, after Kenny Golladay and Dory Jackson have been signed, you really look at it and you say, Micah Parsons is very, very enticing there. I know he did not play in 2020, but pairing him with Blake Martinez at that second level, he can drop into coverage. You can use him off the edge very effectively. I mean, he was recruited to Penn State as an edge rusher. He can really add a certain element to the blitz packages from the linebacker position that Patrick Graham likes to run. I mean, I really think he can unlock the next level that you want. I think Micah Parsons is really, really intriguing. But at the same time, I look at this offensive line and it seems like there's some uncertainty here, right? We're really hoping for Matt Parrott, Will Hernandez, and Shane Lemieux to kind of hit that level, but that's not certain at all. And I know you bring in Rob Sale, you bump Freddie Kitchens up to be an offensive analyst, you bring back Pat Flaherty, and you hope they unlock these players' potentials, but that's still, you're hoping right there. You're hoping from a jump for multiple players, and that's not even bringing up Andrew Thomas, who you hope plays similar to the latter half of the year and not the beginning half of the year.
Right.
So offensive line can't be ruled out either. And if Rashawn Slater there at 11, that's definitely a course of action that I would support, but I'm also for trading down because I still love to have a team that's deep. I love to create competition. If you get more picks in the mid round, you get more kicks at this can of players who could be successful or players that could be going under the radar because of all the uncertainty that we talked about before.
So you got to give me a name though. You got to give me one.
Okay. I'm going to say Rashawn Slater.
Me too. I need to be fair. I need to watch Slater. He's one I haven't watched. I promise you, I'll watch him by the time this episode comes out. How about that? But if he's everything that everyone says he is, I'll probably be on that. Where, yeah, like you said, last week I would have said Jalen Waddle or Devonta, you know, who, which of those big three would have fell. And then when we signed Galladay, I'm like, okay, let's look at Caleb Farley or certain, you know, whichever corner you preferred. And then now it's like, I think I got to go offensive line and just try and build this offense up around Jones.
I want to ask you, Bobby, is Waddle and these players, are they completely off the table now with the Kenny Galladay addition?
No, and it would be fun and it'd be exciting, but I just feel like it would be reckless. Obviously, Galladay is Galladay. Shepard is going to play in the slot. And then Slayton, I don't think Slayton's a guy you put on the bench, you know? And you could talk about rotating guys and playing, but Slayton is better than the fourth wide receiver. And I think he's going to benefit a ton from having Galladay. So, and also there's so many wide receivers I like, you know, it seems like wide receiver is deep every single year in the draft nowadays. Like, you know, Deami Brown, who, you know, some people have him in the third round. I think that guy's like worth a first round pick. Rondale Moore. If you told me Rondale Moore was like, didn't have injuries, he'd be wide receiver 4 for me. Like, there's so many other guys at wide receiver that you can fall in love with that one of them is going to be there in the second round if you truly want to add that piece. But I just feel like it'd be reckless because I feel like we have a good wide receiver core now. And like you said, that's a lot of faith into Will Hernandez, Shane Lemieux, and Matt Parrott, who you like those guys, but I don't think you can just totally trust them.
Absolutely. And you also got to look at it. We know Jason Garrett loves to run a lot of 12, even 13 personnel package, even with an addition like Colin Gillespie, who's going to come in and compete with Caden Smith for that H-back role on the counter trade play that the Giants love to run. I mean, I don't think they're going to stray away from that kind of base run play. I think they're still going to have those power gap elements and multiple tight end personnel packages, which is just going to take another receiver off the field. But man, dude, I think about Jalen Waddle, dude, and I'm like, imagine him with Saquon Barkley. I mean, look at 2019.
It'd be nuts.
Look at 2019. How did defenses play the Giants in 2019, Bobby? They loaded that box. They made Daniel Jones red. How are you going to do that with Jalen Waddle, man? How are you going to load the box and just trust some poor cornerback soul against somebody who has Tyreek Hill type of acceleration and speed and separation ability? That would be really intriguing, but I tend to agree with you. I don't think it's fully off the table. I never completely rule it out, but I tend to agree with you. You got to look at that offensive line or possibly upgrade somewhere on that defense, maybe next to Blake Martinez.
Yeah. I like
I went
into watching Parsons thinking like I had the preconceived notion that, although, you know, it's just, you hear people talk and then you see a couple highlights. And I just would always see him playing so close to the line of scrimmage. I'm like, is this guy the real deal linebacker that everyone says he is? And then I watch him, like, oh yeah, he's real deal. He's an A plus prospect. So,
and also you look at, I mean, he has the character concerns. I hear, like, I think a lot of that may be overblown just from people that I know that are affiliated with the Penn State program, but I can't really, I guess, fully weigh in on that. But who's going to know better than Sean Spencer, the Giants line coach? So that's like an in that the Giants have about this kid as a prospect and his character.
Yeah, 100%, where it's like, hey, if anybody knows, it's our defensive line coach. Like, he was in that locker room with them. And you can't fake it for that long. Like, all your coaches know who you are. You know, you think you might be, you know, even if you might be tricking them, they know who you are. So Sean Spencer knows who Michael Parsons is character wise.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's get off these A plus prospects and let's talk about some of these mid round guys, which I think are much more fun to talk about than the first round guys. Do you want me to point you of which five of these we're going, or who do you want to start off with?
You want to start in the trenches?
Aaron Banks.
You want to start with good old Aaron Banks?
Aaron Banks. Because I watched him today, got my evaluation done, and I really like him.
Yes. Yeah. Aaron Banks is something special to say the least. And it's to the point where I'm like, he could be a third round pick. He could even be a second round pick because this guy has tackle type of size, but he thrives as a guard. And it doesn't always look 100% pretty, but he always gets the job done. He uses that gigantic frame to be thick on contact, uses his front hand well to kind of initiate the contact and then control the inside parts of defensive linemen while kind of steering them in whatever direction he wants, because he plays with exceptional play strength. And as a pass protector, he's very, very good with his posterior strength. I mean, his anchor, good luck trying to bull rush this type of guy or even trying to run around him because he's so damn wide. And he also, he can execute to me. I mean, he's not overly quick, but I think he can do a good job still pulling and kicking into space if you need him to. He does take the good angles to the second level, does a good job as the on the backside of ace blocks, on the front side of ace blocks as well. Kind of climbing to that second level, locating a linebacker, or just getting enough of him to get in his way and not allow him to really have an impact on the play. I mean, somebody that strong, somebody with big hands and the grip strength that he really possesses, you can kind of just gain the inside leverage on a defender and just control him at the point of attack. That's what you kind of want, especially when you run a lot of duo type of blocking concepts. I really like him. And also, you put out like a two eye shade on him or something like that and have him blocked down. Good luck, defender, because you're going to get cleared.
I was watching, I watched him versus Florida State and then against Duke. And Florida State, I don't think I've seen an offensive lineman pancake have so many pancakes in one guy. I mean, just folding guys over and over. And what I like is you got a little Nick Gates into you that he doesn't just like pancake you, he'll put a little extra shot in there or be like, come on, please try and get up and make a play on this because I'm going to be here to light you up or find more work. And I agree with basically everything you've said, where he just moves guys. And like you said, it's not always perfect. Sometimes his hands can be misplaced. That being said, do you think the way he's able to move guys in the run game and, like you said, torque them and steer them, do you think that will translate to the NFL, that type of strength? Or do you think it's, you know, like, you know, some guys can bully people in college and they can't in the NFL. Do you think that's going to translate quickly for him?
Quickly is another, it's going to be hard to see how he kind of translates to NFL speed and then how NFL players can convert speed to power well, even as interior defensive linemen. But just look at his size, man. I mean, that size, that's on the books, baby. That's something that's not going away. And that's NFL size for a freaking tackle, let alone a guard. And I think he carries his weight relatively well too. And that's a huge part of it. So I think eventually, yes, he's somebody who's going to be able to kind of move bodies and control bodies at the point of attack. I think he could be a year one starter too. I don't think he's somebody that has to have a year of development. And there's always growing pains when these guys end up coming into the league, but that doesn't mean they, by, you know, the third week, fourth week, they start kind of adjusting and getting comfortable with the speed and the power of the game. I think that's well within the wheelhouse for Aaron Banks.
Yeah. 6'5", 340, and you mentioned come in and start. I would, if the Giants were to draft him wherever, I would immediately like project him over starting over Shane Lemieux. Maybe not Hernandez, but I agree with everything you say where he said he's not going to be super fast pulling, but he's effective. So he may, you know, let linebackers, you know, he might tip the hand to linebackers a little easier. But when he's kicking out, I mean, he's always, you know, making that block on the inside shoulder and doing a good job. And the only thing that you kind of worry about is, like in pass pro, can he play the full man with that speed at the NFL? But that's an issue that Shane Lemieux had struggles with. Will Hernandez has struggled with at times. So like comparatively with the Giants, I think it'd be cool. And, you know, you mentioned the size of the tackle. He played left tackle against FSU in the middle of that game when Eichenberg went down or whatever, however you pronounce him, name. And he looked pretty good doing it too. So, yeah, he's a guy he might be second on my most excited guys on your list.
Oh, on this list, he's second on the most exciting guy. I thought he would be number one because I know you're unless you're big on the next offensive lineman that we're going to dive into. No,
you'll see. You know what? What am I hiding it for? Weaver. I love Rashad Weaver. So
honestly, and Rashad Weaver on this list, he's on the bottom half for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about him. Let's pull up Rashad Weaver.
Let's talk about Rashad.
6'5", 270, true defensive end out of Pitt.
Yes, Rashad Weaver to me, man. I think, I mean, you look, he was injured in 2019, had an ACL, and I watched film prior to the injury and then film after the injury, and it did look like he lost a step. I don't see somebody who has a quick second and third step. I think his initial quickness is actually pretty solid. Love his length, and I love what he offers from that standpoint. I think he could be successful on tackle end and end tackle stunts, and I like to see that if the Giants were to select him in like the fourth or fifth round or even a little bit later if he's still around because of those injury concerns, see him in that role with Leonard Williams, you know, later in the season. I think that could be something that's intriguing, but I don't see a great athlete, really. I don't see somebody who has superior athletic ability and who's quick twitch, really. I think he uses his hands solidly, I would say, up the pass rushing arc, does well to keep his chest clean, has a nice chop swim move that he engages, which I love to see. But I probably like another pass rusher that we're going to talk about a little bit more than Rashad Weaver.
Counterpoint, I think he's got better. Like you make good points. I think he's got better and a more diverse like tool bag of pass rush moves than some of the first round guys. Like I look at him and he's like, you know, they like a pure shooter in the NBA. Like, you know, you don't have to be the best player in the NBA to be a pure, like a better pure shooter than other guys. Like he has pure pass rush moves and it just looks so natural.
He does.
Doesn't have like the greatest get off, but I think he does a good job getting, you know, getting skinny and horizontal and like working outside in, like, you know, starting outside and then jumping in. I think he does that a lot better than the guys. And I know you're a big Senior Bowl guy. He was someone who, and like him and his teammate Patrick Jones, I had them very similar going in. Coming out, I was like much higher on Weaver and kind of down on Jones.
Jones had a bad Senior Bowl, man.
Very
bad. Not something that's really consistent with his tape because his tape's a little bit better. But I agree, man. He gets skinny and horizontal very, very well, especially starting from the wide. And I think he has that quick first step. For me, if you look at him as a five technique or outside, say wide, and he's going up the pass rushing arc, I think that second and third step isn't all that quick. And he doesn't have as much bend in his lower half, ankle flexion, hip flexion, to really bend through contact, get his hips swiveled and cornered to the pocket. I don't think he does that overly well, but I do love how he uses his hands to kind of assist him to maximize the lack of elite athletic traits that he has, because I think he's very, very crafty with his hand use and where he kind of hits a lot of these offensive linemen, how he, you know, subtly pulls the inside shoulder down and then brings his inside arm on a swim move against a offensive tackle. I think he uses his hands well, but it's the athletic ability that's something that is a little bit concerning. And I'm wondering if it was the injury that kind of zapped it just a little bit heading into the 2020 season.
Yeah, well, I will say this. I don't view him as a scheme fit for the Giants. I like him, but I think for the Giants, he'd have to be, you know, a stand-up outside linebacker. He's never dropped back into coverage. Mm-hmm. That's a necessity for Patrick Graham. We saw it with I thought Marcus Golden was the best, you know, talking about a pure pass rusher on the Giants, and they wouldn't play him because, there that threat of dropping back into coverage wasn't there.
That's huge for the Giants scheme, man.
Yeah, so I mean, I would like to see him in like a traditional 4-3 type guy place, but I do love Weaver. He's one of my draft crushes in the mid round. So,
and he had 34 tackles for loss, 14 in 2018, 14 in 2020, and then 6 in 2017. Again, didn't play in 2019. Had 17 career sacks. Was able to get 7.5 of them in his last season. And I thought he was solid at the Senior Bowl. There were other edge rushers that were more impactful in my opinion, but he was still solid.
Yeah. All right. So who do you? Okay, we're talking edge. Let's go to your next guy, Ellerson Smith.
Yeah, man, Ellerson Smith. I just tweeted about Ellerson Smith, man. And I saw a good athlete, don't get me wrong, down at the Senior Bowl, but I didn't think this guy would jump 127 inches in the broad and then 41.5 inches in the vertical, which is absolutely insane from an edge prospect. He ended up running like a 4.69, and this dude is like 6'6.5", 262 pounds. That's insane, Bobby. Those are insane measurables. And down at the Senior Bowl, you were there, man. I mean, he was really disruptive, and not just in these one-on-one drills where it's kind of set up for defenders to have success over the offensive linemen, but he was disruptive in the team drills. And that's where I thought he did really well. Again, shooting interior gaps, getting skinny, and using play strength to kind of run through the half-man relationship that he would end up establishing with some of those Senior Bowl offensive linemen. And this is also a guy who didn't play in 2020. He went to UNI, which is a smaller school. It's an FCS program, did not play in 2020, ends up going down the Senior Bowl and making his presence known and imposing his will on people. I think he's somebody in 2019, he was really, really productive. I want to say he had like 14 sacks, 21 and a half tackles for loss or something absolutely ridiculous. He's somebody, man, that really intrigues me. Again, in coverage, he's playing against such smaller level competition that it's hard to take a lot of that seriously. And it was a year ago, but from what you saw from him at the Senior Bowl, there's a lot of intrigue there. But again, similar to Weaver, it's like, can he fit? I'm of the mindset that Patrick Graham can find use for a lot of these different guys. I'm always of that mindset because he's a smart coach and he's not going to try to fit a square peg into a round hole. I think that he would be effective as a defensive lineman. And he's one of those bigger type of guys who has incredible length, which we know the NFL prioritizes. Sorry about that train, but I like him, man. I like him as a prospect. I really do.
So you mentioned he's cookie cutter. He's got good athleticism. Do you think he's a good enough pass rusher to make up for what I think is like bad in the run game? Like I watched him against Dylan Radins of North Dakota State, who's a good player in his own right. And, you know, when you talk to some of the ends down there and you ask them who was the best guy they went against, and he was one they mentioned a lot. But I watched Raiden dominate him in the run. I just felt even the other guys at North Dakota like kind of handled him. And North Dakota is a good team. Do you think he's a good enough pass rusher to get away with that, or do you think he's a guy you kind of have to like stash, like a Cam Brown type? We got to stash him and let him develop.
I think he's somebody who's going to get drafted way ahead of where Cam Brown went, but I do believe he's more of a situational pass rusher as of right now. And that's why we're talking about him on day three. I don't think he's somebody who has a ton of sand in his ass, really. And obviously his length, his center of gravity, they're all a little bit higher because he is 6'6" and a half, but he doesn't necessarily have that sand in the ass to hold up, I think, in year one against NFL tackles to consistently set the edge. That's something that I feel like smart defensive coordinator is going to have to employ him judiciously just because of that fact.
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, you mentioned the athletic ability, the cookie cutter size, and the production makes you want to take a chance on him. But I watching Dylan Raiden, I watched Raiden's in the one game of 2020, you know, while watching Lance too, and watching at the Senior Bowl, and then watching him in this game, it really kind of upgraded him in my mind. It's like, man, this is, you know, an Ellerson Smith guy who, like, you know, you like a lot of people like, and he just handled him. I know we're not talking about him, but.
Yeah, Dylan Raiden's, that's an interesting one, because I remember at the start of this process, I was hearing people that I respect in the industry talk about him as like a late day one pick.
Yeah, so that's crazy to me.
Yeah, I watched the film, dude. And I ended up doing an evaluation for Giants Country on it. And I was like, late day one pick? What the heck are they talking about, dude? He's playing at the FCS level. He should be dominating almost snap in and snap out if he's going to be a first round pick at that level. And he just wasn't. So I could see him maybe being like a day two pick, maybe in the third round, somebody you can develop, somebody who may have some upside to be kicked in the guard, but definitely not somebody in the first round. I thought that was really, really rich, especially in this draft class where you have a lot of tackles who are pretty intriguing. The Walker Littles of the world, Samuel Cosmi, Eichenberg, Alex Leatherwood are all going in that similar range to Redunz.
Yeah, I see some people, like you said, some people have him as day one. I think that's crazy to me. I think he's got good traits. And then, you know, like I said, defensive end saying like, hey, this was the best guy I went against. It's like, okay, maybe I should listen to the people who are going up against him. And like you said, one-on-ones and stuff are built for the defense. And he did all right in those. But I agree. When I saw people saying day one for him, I was kind of blown away. But he did do good against Ellerson Smith. All right, well, let's see. We got Trill, we got Amir, who I like, and Quinn Miners. Which way do you want to go?
Let's go to Quinn, man.
Quinn Miners, the D3 love child of this year's draft process.
And honestly, man, I always have a soft spot for Division III guys. I coach Division III, so, and I think Jim Nagy and his staff at the Senior Bowl do a good job bringing one D3 or two D3 or maybe a D2 guy down every year to help compete. And usually they don't make this type of impact. Ben Bartsch last year was a good Division II prospect from St. John's that went down there.
He was actually my conference, Ben Bartsch.
Oh yeah.
How about that? He was the redhead tackle, right?
Yes. Yes. He was drinking it was like an energy drink with all this weird stuff in it, raw eggs and like Powerade. It was gross, but
you know, the school he goes to, they never wear pads in practice. St. John's,
Minnesota.
Their coach was I don't know if he might be dead now, to be honest, but their coach was the most winning coach in college football history. But yeah, they don't wear pads in practice. It's kind of crazy.
Bobby, where did you play?
St. Olaf. And so he went to St. John's in Minnesota.
Was Mount Union, are they in your conference?
No. But they, them in Wisconsin Whitewater, who, you know, where Quinn Miners from, were always the D1 powerhouse. St. Thomas was like number three in there. I don't know now. I remember they were trying to like petition to get to like 1AA, yeah, or whatever they call it now.
Yeah, those are like D3 powerhouse. I mean, I coached at FDU. We're not a D3 powerhouse.
Yeah, St. Thomas beat us 49-0. It was brutal.
Yeah, those schools take it to another level. But I first heard about Quinn Miners actually down at the 2020 Senior Bowl. So his offensive line coach, Owen Reese, he's a buddy of mine, and he was like, yo, we have this kid, Quinn Miners, he's an absolute stud. And I'm thinking that like Owen is just like, you know, kind of building up his dude and stuff like that, but he ends up getting the invite down to the Senior Bowl, but only because Landon Dickerson tore his ACL. That's why. If Dickerson doesn't end up getting hurt, Quinn Miners never goes down there. But you were down at the Senior Bowl, man. Him and Dwayne Eskridge were some of the smaller school guys. There's some of the talks of the Senior Bowl, man. So I really like what I've seen from Quinn Miners, his ability to kind of adapt himself to play with these Division I type of guys. I mean, he's somebody that you wouldn't expect, you know. I mean, he ended up going down 6'3". He totally redid his body because he didn't play, obviously, in 2020, coming from Division III. 6'3", 320 pounds, 10-plus inch hands, had 33-inch arms, which is pretty damn solid for an interior offensive lineman, but he showed a ton of strength at the point of attack, and I loved him in combo blocks as well. I was wondering, like, yeah, he can hold up in these individual drills, which is good, which is something you want to see, because, like I said, defenders are usually set up in a more advantageous position than the offensive players. But he did really well backside of ace blocks, climbing to the second level on the front side of ace blocks, using his forward hand and his post hand well to kind of control and steer, showing exceptional core strength and lower body strength. Those are all things that you're kind of looking for from a smaller level player. How will his strength translate against Division I athletes? And I thought I saw that kind of translate more than I expected. And you love the crop top and all that kind of stuff.
I was going to say, we're not just falling in love with the D3 with the belly hanging out, guys. I just hope we're not doing that.
I hope not either, but again, I don't know if he's going to be there on day three, to be honest, because I can see somebody at the end of round two and even round three look at him and be like, look, he played center effectively down at the Senior Bowl, so he has that kind of upside, but he was a guard in college, and it's hard to watch his tape and take it seriously because he's just manhandling dudes. I mean, he's pulling and annihilating people, but he had the athletic ability to pull quickly and unlock his hips and do those bucket steps to kind of get himself into space and take good angles to the end man on the line of scrimmage on some of those power gap runs. That's stuff that you want to see, and he was able to do that still quickly. You can kind of tell that, even though everyone else is kind of moving a little bit slower on tape for Division III level prospect. But I mean, when he goes down the Senior Bowl and dominates like he did, it's somebody that's going to end up catching your eye. So he's somebody for the Giants' third round pick. If he's still around, I would love to entertain to bring in, has that positional versatility in the interior offensive line, which is something we know Joe Judge puts a lot of value on. He wants somebody who can play multiple positions, because say Nick Gates goes down, you don't want to freaking fill that void with Spencer Pulley. So you want to end up bringing in somebody who could possibly kick to that position, has reps there and looked solid taking on nose tackles at the point of attack, Division I nose tackles, that is, at the point of attack at the Senior Bowl.
So we're talking interior offensive lineman, and then you mentioned Western Michigan and Dwayne Eskridge, who, I mean, he balled. He looked like on a different level down there. Jalen Moore out of Western Michigan. I don't know if you've watched him yet. I just fell in love with him watching one-on-ones. He was a tackle. He played guard in the game and he took some guard reps. I think that dude's going to be a steal, Jalen Moore. Like I see him playing – if he plays guard in the NFL, and I know there's a bad habit with draft talk of just, like, trying to change every tackle to guard. But with him, I think he could be a beast. So I thought Western Michigan, those guys on offense were the winners, like Jalen Moore on offense for that squad, and then Dwayne Eskridge as the wide receiver.
And Moore was somebody that a lot of people just kind of forgot about, because he did look really good in the one-on-ones at tackle, and when he did kick in the guard in some of those team periods, he was somebody who showed enough foot speed in his kick slide and kind of got out into space, handled counters well. Whenever somebody tried to collapse his inside shoulder, he would drive him where a guard would be in those one-on-ones, which is something you want to see. He's not giving up that inside shoulder like Andrew Thomas did a lot in the first half of this season. So I haven't watched his tape yet. That's something I really want to get to that offense, obviously, because there's two – talked about prospects, but I haven't seen the tape. But just from my impression of him at the Senior Bowl, it's somebody that definitely could be on this list and maybe should be on this list.
And like you said, one-on-ones are built for the defense. I thought he just looked like, even Radins, who did good in those, I thought Moore was just the one who looked like he just looked natural out there in one-on-ones, which there's a lot going on. And it's like one-on-ones, I hate, as an offensive lineman, one-on-ones are the worst thing in the world. You know, I'd have a guy who would beat me 3 times out of 5 in one-on-ones, and then in team period, the guy never beat me once in like 2 years. So, So Moore looked pretty good in that.
I mean, think about that too with one-on-ones. All you got to do if you're a defender, you expand the tackle out in space, get him moving up the arc, then go inside. There's no guard that he could push you into like it would be in real life. Yeah, no.
Or it's like, you know, bull rushing a center. It's like, that's not going to work. Like he's always going to have someone on either side of him. You know, you're not going to be, those moves aren't going to work.
Every time, man.
So they're brutal. So we snuck in a little Eskridge and Moore in there. So now we got left. We got Trill Williams and then the wide receiver. Let me let you pronounce the wide receiver out of Iowa.
That's Amir Smith-Marset.
Marset. Okay, there we go. Sounds easy enough.
We'll go to Mr. Amir Smith-Marset. So I had the privilege, I guess you could say, to watch a lot of Iowa football. One of my best friends is a huge diehard Iowa fan, and he's also one of my roommates now. So I end up watching a lot of them, and I'm always like, who the heck is this Amir Smith-Marset fella? Because he's playing in Iowa, which is not known for their pizzazz or their explosiveness or their athletes. They really aren't
throwing the ball at all.
Or throwing the ball at all. I mean, back when Gabe Davis was their offensive coordinator, it was a lot worse. Now they have Kirk Ferentz's son, Brian Ferentz, as their offensive coordinator. It's a little bit more creative, and you could see how they use Smith-Marset. But you see an explosive player, and he's, you could, I guess if you want to get lazy with analysis, you could say that he's a knockoff of a Jaylen Waddle. Obviously, it's very, very lazy type of analysis, but he's a player who's a little bit undersized, who's incredibly explosive, and can do good job getting vertical. His past year, he ended up scoring a touchdown, doing a front flip, and then hurting his ankle and basically getting knocked out of a lot of games. But he should be ready for the NFL season. But this is somebody who a lot of people were talking about before that injury, and then everyone's kind of not talking about him anymore. I think he could fall to the third day, and I think he's an interesting gadget type of piece that you could add to a creative offense, get him into space. He can make people miss and use that explosive ability to really help an offense. That's something the Giants really need from 2020. Granted, they're going to get Saquon Barkley back. They added John Ross. It's really going to help with the explosiveness. But I still believe somebody like Amir Smith-Marset, who's going to have special teams value as a kick returner and a punt returner, I think that's a solid move for an NFL team. And I know he's coming from a program that's not traditionally known for their athletes, but this dude is a legit NFL athlete.
With better QB play, I think he'd be talked about a lot more. And then, like you mentioned, the injuring himself on the celebration. And I think he had the little legal issues too. I fall in love with the guys who are those vertical threats. And then because of that, it sets them up for the underneath routes, you know, the digs, outs, you know, comebacks, slants, whatever. And that's what he is. And so that's why, like, I will always take a chance on those guys rather than, you know, the day three guys who runs the perfect route or, you know, like Amari Rodgers. I like Amari Rodgers a lot. Think he's very crisp. He's very good in the slot, but I think I'd rather take a chance on a guy like Amir than I would Amari.
I think Amari Rodgers is the better prospect, but Amari Rodgers is probably only going to be a slot receiver in the NFL, and they might use him at running back sometimes, which we saw at Clemson's pro day. But Amir Smith-Marset, I mean, he's somebody who has 34 career carries in college, and that's something that the Iowa offensive Brian Ferentz really wanted to implement, because you get him on an end around, he can get the edge, outrun an edge rusher easily, outrun the linebacker. And then it's just him and a safety. He makes that safety miss if the corner is being blocked by the wide receiver. Then you can have a really explosive play from a simple low risk type of run.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that was too, you know, like they realized who Iowa was and like manufacturing touches for an explosive player in Amir. He kind of reminds, and I hate player comparisons. I think I suck at them, but he kind of reminds me of Slayton a little bit, where it's like, I know Slayton had Stidham, but I never liked Stidham. Like, I thought he, you know, like suffered from bad QB play, and you could do that with a lot of wide receivers, and was, you know, that vertical threat who's not a perfect prospect, but you can get on day three and year one, year two, be like, oh wow, this guy's really exceeded our expectations.
I think that's a good comparison, to be honest, from that standpoint. I think they're different type of receivers, both explosive in their own right. But I think that's a pretty sound comparison right there, because he probably is going to be
a horrible one anyways.
Yeah, but I wouldn't acknowledge it as a good one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I wouldn't put myself in the same sinking ship as you, Bobby.
I hate player comparisons. I really do. It's like,
yeah, but that one wasn't really a comparison. You're just comparing where they're being drafted and the impact that they can have.
For sure. All right, so now we got one last guy on the list. We got to get a New York guy, and Trill Williams, the outside / slot / safety out of Syracuse.
Yeah, so Trill the Thrill, his pro day. I mean, that Syracuse secondary is pretty intriguing, man, when you look at Mellon
Cisco. Font. They got some guys over there. And then what's the other corner's name, the big one?
Ifeatu Melifonwu.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he ended up running, I think, like a 4.4 something Mellon Fonwu, which is really, really
impressive at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people unfairly compare him to his brother, Obi Mellon Fonwu. But Obi, I mean, he set like basically combine records with a 141-inch broad and a 44-inch vertical, which is just insane when you really think about it. But Ifeatu Mellon Fonwu, 41.5-inch vertical, 11 feet, 12-inch broad jump. I mean, that's still nothing to kind of bat your eyes at right there. And but we're not going to talk about him. We're going to talk about Trill the Thrill, Trill Williams. I believe he was a 4-star recruit, and he ends up going to Syracuse. Now he's been dinged up. He kind of played through injury, but he ends up running a 4.4, jumps 36 in the vert, 10.3 in the broad, 20 bench reps. And I think that's solid. The thing I like about Trill is he's versatile. He could play the slot. He has upside to possibly play boundary corner, and you can play him at safety. And he has that athletic ability to kind of cover the post in coverage. You know, he can drop to the post. He can kind of undercut those seven routes if he's playing in the slot. He can take good angles to the football and a lot of different route concepts and stuff like that. From an athletic standpoint, you really like what you see from someone like that. I think he's a little bit wild going into the tackle point sometimes, but I think he's an effective tackler when the mechanics are all set. And I trust in this coaching staff to really help that. I mean, Jerome Henderson, you got Patrick Graham, you got Jeremy Pruitt. You have a lot of good coaches there who have been around players like this who are somewhat developmental, but they can have a high upside. And this point of the draft, man, you know, you talk about the fourth, fifth round. I'm looking for somebody who has a lot of upside. If they can unlock with good coaching, if you can lock a high amount of potential, then they can turn into a solid to good starter. And I think that is true. I don't think he is right now. I think he can come into the league and he could bust, to be honest. But I think there's a lot of potential there due to his athletic ability and three different positions that he could be groomed to play. That's something that you're looking for if you're the New York Giants. I mean, yes, you're filled right now, man. You're good. Your secondary is one of the best in the league. It's not quite Baltimore Ravens probably right now, but it's very, very, very good. So if you could add somebody who has a lot of upside, a lot of potential, why not do that on the third day?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the coaching, because I do think he's someone who is going to need some real deal solid coaching. Because
oh, yes.
He's an athlete. He's the perfect, like, when you look at him out there and you see him run, you're like, oh, this guy is a beast. I just feel like sometimes he just... I wish they would have found him one position and let us stick at it and learn it. Because I think, like you said, he has all the potential in the world, but there's like, I want to see it translate into like working. Cause like at safety, it's like, okay, good job, fast, but he kind of sucks getting off blocks at sometimes. And then they have him at nickel and they have him playing like 12, 15 yards off at times. It's like, so he's someone that, again, I like, he's worth taking a shot on, but I worry that he could be a guy that we look back 2 years from now and say he never played a snap in the NFL, or he could be like, man, he was a steal.
And I think that's a good way to look at Trill Williams, because it is, like I said, I don't want to say boom bust, but he has elements of that to him. But I'll tell you, bro, whew, Andre Sisco, man, I know he's coming off of surgery, so he didn't run at the pro day, I don't believe. But I think he did a crap load of freaking bench press reps, and that's what he ended up doing for him. And when you turn on his tape, if you watch some of Syracuse, you could see him flying around.
Sisco. He's my type of player.
He's not going to be there on day three, but he has that NFL type body. And he also has the ball skills to go up and attack the catch point with a lot of physicality, takes great angles down and run support to stick running backs. There's a lot to like about Andre Sisco. It's just funny, man, that you have three legit NFL prospects coming out of a school like Syracuse, all in the similar position group. You don't really see that all that often from a school like that.
He's my type of player, Andre Sisco. You know, before the Giants signed Logan Ryan, we did like a mini, like, you know, 2021 draft week last offseason in June. And I was like, man, you got Jabril, who next year will be going into his last year on the deal, in McKinney. And we know that defenses like to run a lot of three safety looks. I was like, look out for Sisco, man. He's like, he would fit so perfectly with the Giants. But like you said, there's just really no need there and for where he's going to go in the draft.
Absolutely. I mean, you can only play a certain amount of these guys, and hopefully, you know, knock on wood, they all stay healthy. We want to see Xavier McKinney out there for more than just 4 or 5 games, because I think that kid has all the potential in the world and all the smarts too in the process, and he can handle so many different assignments. And that's one of the things I love about the Giants secondary, is a lot of these pieces, they have defined roles, but they're all somewhat interchangeable. And you could see that. I mean, Logan Ryan, he will drop in the box. You could see Xavier McKinney drop in the box. He'll play the apex defender, that overhang spot. He can drop and cover middle of the field, close center field, and play that. It's like, wow, you can really kind of fool the defense with a lot of pre-snap, or fool the offense, I should say, with a lot of pre-snap movement, because these guys are so interchangeable.
Well, how excited are, we're done talking about draft. How excited are you for Adore? You know, Adore is not perfect, but I just feel like he opens everything back up for Patrick Graham, where I think Patrick Graham, I think, did a great job with what he had. But I think Patrick Graham wants to run a little more man coverage and blitz, especially on third down. And you saw he started to do that versus Pittsburgh, and he got screwed. You're like, all right, we're just going to throw back shoulders at Corey Ballantyne all day. Now he's got a cornerback one he can trust and can make plays. And then obviously Bradbury, and then Holmes. You know, I think like Holmes is one of the most underrated storylines from last offseason. Like, we might have our nickel corner in that guy. And then obviously the three safeties you mentioned. How excited are you for what Patrick Graham's going to cook up this year? Because I feel like he impressed us so much in 2020. He's just going to throw a ton more at us now.
Oh, I love it, dude. I'm very excited because you're going to be able to run whatever coverage concept you want, because Adoree Jackson, he has his faults. He's sometimes susceptible to the big play. He can be a little bit indecisive sometimes. Will commit his hips a little bit early because he has the athletic ability to overcompensate for that mistake. But man, he could play man coverage, bro. He could play man coverage. James Bradberry can play man coverage. Now you can play man coverage on third and six, on third and short, and not be a liability, not have that liability that offensive coordinator is going to be like, hey, quarterback, target this player, target this player. And that's what we saw with Isaac Yiddin, and we saw it with Ryan Lewis. I thought Julian Love did well towards the end of the season, but I like having him as like a swing defender, not somebody who has to commit to the cornerback spot. He hasn't necessarily proven that yet, but you add Adoree Jackson, man, and you really add yourself somebody who's going to afford you the ability to play man coverage whenever you really want, bring more exotic and different type of blitz packages. I'm excited for it. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, yo, he's like a top five player on the Giants right now. I think that's a bit aggressive. I don't think he's a top 10 cornerback in the league, but he has the potential to be because he's 25 years old, coming off of an injury riddled season. So I love the potential. I mean, right now, I think you've got a really solid number two quarterback or corner, or you can even say good corner in Adoree Jackson, but he has that potential to be a number one. And then you can have two number one cornerbacks with James Bradberry and Adoree Jackson, kind of shutting down opponents' pass coverages, allowing the edge rushers and this pass rush to really get home, because that's kind of something that is a little concerning right now. Who's going to end up rushing the passer for this Giants? Yeah. But if you have great coverage on the back end, you can scheme up TE and ET stunts and twists and bring Darnay Holmes off the nickel, bring Tate Crowder or Blake Martinez from the second level to kind of help your blitz packages with five-man pressure packages. And that's something that I feel like the Giants can now do, and also just use a totally different coverages on the back end and not be relegated to just like a three high cover three match type of defense.
It's going to be fun. And I will say the Giants pissed me off with Julian Love, because all summer it's like, man, I think this guy can be a good corner. I think it'd be a good corner. He was, you know, an awesome corner coming out of Notre Dame. They don't play him at corner at all in camp. Like, he doesn't get a single rep at corner in camp. It's like, okay, he's a safety. Plays safety all year. And then I totally gave up on the Julian Love at corner dream. And then against Cleveland and Dallas, I got him playing corner. So now I'm totally sucked back in. Like, can the Julian Love play corner? But Adoree Jackson, I think, closes that door a little bit for him.
It does, for unless someone gets injured again, knock on wood. The thing about Julian Love is he can play corner, but he's not even close to the athlete that Adoree Jackson is. And Adoree Jackson's athletic ability allows him to
excel in Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
I went through the Chiefs film of him from 2019, and there was a play where Hill, on a crossing route, Jackson stumbles out of the gate, like stumbles.
I've seen
and this, is still able to keep up with him. Like, that's nuts. Like, there's how many corners can do that in the NFL?
Yeah, I know. You get beat at the line of scrimmage against Tyreek Hill, you're usually screwed. But he was able to use a lot of short area quickness and burst, and even just to get his hips in the right position to explode and then cut the angle off well, because Tyreek Hill can just change direction so effortlessly because he's such a good athlete. You saw that a lot on Adoree's tape on those deep horizontal crosses, him just ride that outside hip, use that outside arm, or I should say, I guess that inside arm, to subtly control the receiver's hips while using that outside arm to jump in front to knock it away, the ball away, which is good technique. It's what Jerome Henderson preaches. That's why he criticized Jabril Peppers on that one touchdown on Thursday Night Football.
Philly, I know where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the technique that he wants, because, you know, you can control that receiver there. And when you dive with the front arm, then you have a back arm. Granted, he was using it on the hip, which is something you want to do too. You just got to be subtle about it, because you grab too much, you get flagged, which is something we don't want to see.
For sure. All right, Nick, where can people find you, and where can they hear you too?
Alrighty. So I'm just Nick Falato on the Bird app. It's pretty, you know, boring. Just Falato. I write for Big Blue View and Giants Country Sports Illustrated. You can find a lot of my articles there. As for podcasts, I'm on the Big Blue View podcast network, but most of my podcast is done on the Big Blue Banter podcast. Please download and everything like that. It's me and CBS's Dan Schneier doing all 22 breakdowns and just talking about this team that we love. That is the Big Blue Banter podcast.
For sure. Love having you on before the draft. We'll have Dan on after the draft, and you know, we will let you formulate our takes and find our Logan Wilsons, Allen Robinsons, Kayvon Wallace's, Matt Peart. So, Nick, thanks again for coming on.
And thank you for having me, Bobby. Take care.
No holds bad. He took me in the low post and won, but I think we had on the varsity.
All right, thanks, Nick Falato, for coming on. And by the way, guys, If you guys haven't already heard, we want to share some exciting news from John Boy Media. Tuesday, March 23rd, Season 10 of Last from the Past launch on podcast apps and YouTube. Thanks to our friends at Cushy Dreams, Season 10 is a six-week series with a new episode dropping every Tuesday. We are so excited this new season and want you all to be the first ones to tune in. Catch the first episode on our YouTube channel, John Boy and Jake TV, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Head over to the new John Boy and Jake TV YouTube channel and subscribe for Last from the Past and other great content. All right, again, thank you, Nick Filato, for coming on the show. Enjoy your guys' weekend. But first, Justin, we have a cool thing we're going to do. Friday, 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, we are doing an all-Spanish YouTube stream. The Zona Gigantes guys, Ruben Vargas, Jorge Vico, they do a great job. They've been supporters for a long time. So I made these Hablando Gigantes stickers.
Yes.
Going to be giving a lot of those away. All you have to do is subscribe to their channel, and then you'll be also entered into the raffle for, if you like, send me a screenshot of subscribing to their channel, you entered in a raffle to win that t-shirt. And right now we have like only like 10 people, so you got a good shot at it. So if you catch this before 1 o'clock, and even not, like, I'm not doing the raffle until Saturday, so you got all of Friday to subscribe to Zona Gigantes. Show them support. I want to get them to 1,000 subscribers so they can start monetizing their channel. Those guys are awesome. And get a chance at the Hablando Gigantes stickers. I put one on at the taco truck by my office, so we are good to go. Justin, how did you like the Nick Filato interview?
It was great.
Did you listen?
No, I did not listen to it yet.
You guys believe this liar. He just lied to our audience. I'm sitting here trying to get our audience to trust us with information, and you just lied to them.
It's like you know I listen to it after the fact that we record when I edit. I don't listen to it before.
I know. I just wanted to make sure everyone knew you were a liar. That's a little term called entrapment in the biz.
Mm.
Police can't do that to you. All right, Justin. We appreciate everybody. Yes, we'll see you guys on Tuesday, most likely with another really good interview. Won't say it until it's done. Appreciate you guys. Until then, let's go, Big Blue.